This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Now time for the MGoBlog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket online at WTK.com. The MGoBlog Roundtable is brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, a Michigan man, Matt Demarest.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. MGoBlog Roundtable. Brian Cook across from me. Brian, how you doing this morning?
I'm a little irritated. Someone cut into my time.
You want John Beilein and Terry Mills here right now?
No. The whole problem is that he called it.
I was actually going to jump in and ask him if he thought John Teske was better than Terry Mills.
Fine.
But I'm shocked that you didn't, Craig.
I came within
an inch. You did not interrupt the professor and ask him about your pet question?
I almost did, damn.
Craig Ross.
It's dangerous. Yeah, he's probably muted. If you guys have any sense.
You got Craig Ross, whose voice you just heard, and of course Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, your Super Bowl prediction.
Mine too.
Was a little off there.
Hey, you know what? I mean, New England had like the worst pass rush by Justin Zachary going into that game, and they were amazing against a great offensive line from the Rams. So what are you going to do? I mean, that threw off everything for me in that game.
Yeah.
Like game, prop bets, everything.
Yeah, I bet the under. Was that good?
I think so.
Okay.
Man, everyone I talked to thought it was going to be a high-scoring affair. But anyway, Brad Davidson is a dirty player.
Okay, we're going to start with this?
Yes, we're going to start with this because it was watching the game, and the guy sticks his leg out.
That was gross.
Well, Murphy, I mean, he was trying to take the guy's legs out.
He was trying to twist that guy's ankle and put him out for the year. Legitimately attempting to injure the player. And I mean, he cup checked the guy earlier this year. Last year, do you remember the thing he did to Western Kentucky?
No.
Well, so they're trying to inbound the ball at the end of the game. Wisconsin is. And he can run the baseline. So he's running the baseline. And what Davidson does is the guy who's trying to like defend the inbounder, he goes and sets up and takes a charge on the guy because, like, it's just this cheap, unbelievable thing to do with like 3 seconds left in the game. And the refs, to their great shame, fall for it. And so they get to shoot to win the game against Western Kentucky last year. He's just a garbage player.
Yeah, so for those who didn't see it, Jordan Murphy was going up for a shot and, man.
A rebound.
I think he was coming down with a rebound.
He was coming down with a rebound. I just remember the guy sticking his leg out
right where
while Jordan Murphy was in the air. And he was, it was like, this dude is trying to hurt him.
It's a Bo Ryan trademark when you get your foot under shooters.
Blatant.
That is egregious, and it was blatant. There's no way anybody can look at that tape and not think.
So will the Davidson Big Ten do anything? No, they wouldn't even talk about it.
I mean, if I'm Richie Pitino, I'm screaming from the rooftops about it. Like, this guy, that's just, I don't care what basketball, forget being college bad. That's like playground rules, you don't do that.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a fight. If that happens on a playground.
Jordan Murphy would have been well within his rights to.
We need Amadou Ba back for this
to check him over that. That's just
Mokhtar Jai.
And you hope that officials, you hope that the refs look at things like that. Like I heard one of the
I don't get how they ref Davidson. So the very first play of that game, he pushes off to get an open three and doesn't get a call. Like, if I'm a ref, I'm fouling a Davidson out immediately in every game.
See, but they also don't give him as many charges as they seemingly used to.
Well,
Maybe you can only flop so many times.
If Davidson hits the floor, I'm calling a block. I'm getting that guy off the court.
Maybe that's why you're not a ref.
Hey, man, I respect the integrity of the game more than Brad Davidson does.
Wasn't that game where Wisconsin had zero fouls on the road in the first half?
Yes.
I mean, it's something insane. Hopefully that's just the fluke.
It's ridiculous.
We'll get some decent calls on Saturday.
Well, so I don't want to go all Craig here, but Lewis Garrison and DJ Carstensen did both the Iowa game and the Wisconsin game for us. They were that both.
Some of the fouls were legit, but man, they were ticky tack.
The second foul on Teske
was complete.
The Garrison
garbage foul
was so bad because the NCAA has made it a point of saying, look, we're going to let guys contest shots as long as you're vertical. He was 100% vertical. Mm. It was 100% obvious. And Garrison, for some reason,
made a game-changing call.
Beeline gave him a pass on the first foul, even though I thought Teske got all ball. But
that one he reached in, and so
I know. I'm saying Beeline gave him a pass. He said, "Hey, they're going to call that."
You're putting yourself kind of at risk. They're like, I think that little rake on the pick and roll is something he does well and should continue doing. He just shouldn't do it 90 seconds into a game. Like if he's got one foul and it's the second half, go crazy. But like the risk reward there. Especially when you're dealing with refs who are human, or if they're lucky, it's he should have done that. But the contest on the second one, I mean, completely legitimate and the worst call of the year.
Yeah, and especially since it's something that the NCAA has stressed in the entire offseason. That we're going to let teams do this. We've talked
what
to
what game
officials.
Did he call? He called that one, what else?
The Wisconsin game.
Yeah.
And so did Carstensen.
Yeah, well. It was Garrison?
Garrison and Carstensen. So if you see those guys...
Now I remember in the Wisconsin game, those first two fouls they called on guarding Ethan Happ were ridiculous.
Yeah.
They were ridiculous calls.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think Carstensen is a bad ref. I think he's been okay. Garrison, I don't know. But in the main, I think officiating in the Big Ten has been pretty reasonable. Again, I think I don't want to go through it.
Well, you can't say that after watching Wisconsin play basketball. It's gross. Yeah. It's disgusting. I don't know why the league wants their games to be 52-51.
Yeah.
I don't know why they get away with cheating the game, but they do.
Well,
we're going to win on Saturday.
We'll see if he's going to do that to someone that's going to make them pay. You know, players have a way... of making you pay without necessarily throwing a punch.
You know, I hope Michigan's up long enough in the second half that Davidson can take some real charges. Like, if I'm Charles Matthews, I'm getting my money's worth.
He doesn't have the mask to get the money's worth, right?
Sometimes you got to really... He says things that I think are telling about what's to come. So he said, you know, we were talking to Charles about, hey, look,
John
Beeline. So he said, I mean, you're a run jump guy. We need you to really, you know, you should be finishing over guys at the rim. You remember the last game against Wisconsin, and we talked about this. You know, they're catching Ethan Happ on switches, Charles Matthews especially, and he's not driving them. I think we're going to see him do that in this
game.
Well,
they actually put Happ on Iggy.
Mm-hmm.
So they played a lot of... And Michigan was running a lot of 1-4 pick and roll against, who's their most recent opponent? Rutgers.
Rutgers, yeah.
And that was getting him wide open.
Wide open threes, yeah.
And that was because, you know, Omarui is like a 6'7 guy, but he's 240, so he's more postish.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gets, you know, really tests his mobility, and I think that's a good way to attack that if they're going to try to put either Rubers or Happ on it.
Right. So I think we'll see that because that was successful. John Beeline said specifically... You know, they like to play with two big, so we felt like we could exploit, you know, whether it's a five with some slips, some fours with some pick and pop. We felt like one or both of those were gonna work. In this game, they want to put Ethan Happ on Iggy. Boom. I think you see that. If they're going to switch everything like we saw them do at times and you wind up with Ethan Happ on Charles Matthews, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, Dude, let's see if they'll call a foul. Let's see if they'll call a foul on him. Let's make him play a little defense.
I mean,
Happ let off the hook in that game.
I will also say Happ moves his feet better than any 6'10 guy.
I mean, not well enough to cover Iggy. He had a couple blocking fouls that just didn't get called.
Right.
But in general, Happ is a very good defender on the perimeter for a guy his size. So, like, if I'm Wisconsin,
if he's allowed to commit blocking fouls without calls,
he's a good defender.
Well, let's make him play some more defense.
You know, one of the problems in the Iowa game too wasn't just the early fouls on. I mean, Teske had two fouls in 1 minute.
Yeah.
And then they had Livers in,
yep.
And he had two fouls in 2 minutes or two or three minutes. And one of those fouls was non-existent and the other one was light. And so that game really was impacted very early on
by the officials
yeah. and made it very difficult for Michigan to
play five guys at the five and a half. Something's going wrong.
734-998-1050. Let's go to the phones real quick. Talk to Mark in Ann Arbor. Mark, what's up?
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just have a, because I know the MGO blog contributors are, and this isn't to criticize Beilein too much because I still think he's the greatest coach Michigan basketball has ever had.
Correct.
But I know that there's a criticism about Beilein sitting players in the first half when they commit fouls, particularly like sitting them immediately after their first and for the rest of the half, usually after their second foul. And I understand the major criticism of that, but I'm just wondering, does it kind of have a Pavlovian effect on the players, though? Because you notice that Michigan is one of the least foul-prone teams in the country, and I'm wondering if it's just because they're essentially trained not to foul because they know they're going to sit because of that.
Well, I mean, the auto bench stuff is something that frustrates me. It particularly frustrates me when a guy like Poole picks up an early foul, and Poole has like two fouls a game. So like, even if you gave him a foul at the beginning of every game and you played him 40 minutes, he's probably not going to foul out. So during the first 7 minutes of that Iowa game, they were down both Poole and Teske. And to me, like, I'm going to let Poole ride. Like, maybe Teske in that foul environment, okay, maybe you want to auto bench him. But every minute of a basketball game is as valuable as every other minute. So if Teske's going to foul out in 13 minutes, you're going to lose that game either way. And so I'm putting him out there earlier just because I feel like the gap between him and the backup five is so big that we're reducing our chances to win the game by putting him on the bench.
You talk about after the first foul.
I mean, after the second foul.
Because Beilein will say after the second foul, now the guy's not playing defense.
Well,
he's not playing defense at all.
I mean, if I'm a coach, I'm going to be like, you just pretend that fouls don't exist and try to play it straight up. And I know maybe that's a hard adjustment for him, but the Poole one is just like, Jordan Poole isn't fouling out of this game. There's no way. He probably hasn't had four fouls in a single game this year. So, like, if he gets an early one, let it ride. That's my thing.
And I think the caller was asking about, you know, does Michigan not foul because of this auto bench? I don't think that's the case. I mean, Beilein teams have always had a low foul rate.
Well, they've always had auto bench.
But the foul rate obviously includes the second half when there's no issue with this auto bench. And, you know, one thing like Luke Jaklich at Illinois State, their defenses were good, but they had a pretty high foul rate. And I think Beilein's been able to incorporate what Jaklich is doing, but still have this low foul rate. I'm not exactly sure how they're doing it. Obviously, having elite talent on the defensive end is important there. But I think that's just it.
I think that's a big part of why they're effective and still not foul. Because it used to be, the thought used to be that their refusal to
contest
was about staying away from fouls. We thought when we would talk about it, it's like, hey, the reason why we don't see them bodying people and playing a physical style of defense is Michigan State, the reluctance to do that is about not fouling. Mm-hmm. What he's showing now is if you have guys who are really good athletes that can move their feet really well, you don't necessarily have to play the bad boy style defense to be a good defensive team. The fouls he discourages, and he kind of took issue with this. He said, it's not that we go in the game saying, hey, guys, avoid fouls at all costs. We go in saying, avoid the John Teske second foul.
The one where you swipe
it at the ball. Yeah, whichever one that was.
First foul.
Where you're swiping at the ball. Avoid those kinds of fouls. You know, if you're guarding a guy on a dribble drive and they call you on a foul in there, I mean, those things are going to happen.
No, for sure. But I also think part of the philosophy is like, you know, make them hit shots over you because the expected value of that is less than giving a guy two shots at the line. And I haven't checked the numbers, but I'm pretty sure that's true.
They definitely do coaching on how to contest the shot. That's like an emphasis, a focus, going straight up, you know, not infringing upon, a shooter's space. I mean, these are things that they drill consistently, and it, you know, it's effective for typically effective, unless you're with whoever these two guys are that you keep mentioning.
Oh, Garrison and Carstensen.
Those guys are around. It seems to not matter.
Yeah.
Well, I still think Carstensen is an okay ref. And I think
I shouldn't have got him started.
I'm not unhappy to see him. You know, Garrison, the jury's out on. We did get some bad calls from him. I mean, there's no doubt.
Game changing.
We had they were game changing. There's no. You're right.
We got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The take. Have the MGO Blog Roundtable crew back. Have Brian Cook.
Hello.
Cook. Ed Fang from Power Rank.
What's up?
And Ed, excuse me, and Craig, who is a hero to bank tellers throughout Ann Arbor, right?
Well, to say it's heroism is an exaltation of form over substance. But
he's their bro.
Yeah, playoffs is all I have to say. Playoffs.
Why do you have to say playoffs? What is?
Well, you guys. Somebody said a guy who called in said Beilein is the best basketball coach Michigan's ever had.
You're gonna get Johnny Orr calling in.
No, well, you're not, because, you know, I love Johnny Orr.
I'm quitting. I'm leaving. I'm running and hiding if we get a call from Johnny Orr, man.
Yeah. I love John Orr. He's a great storyteller, a wonderful man, and was a very, very fine Michigan basketball coach. But I have to put, I think Beilein just passed him with all-time Big Ten wins. And I have to put Beilein ahead of John Orr as their one and two of the Michigan coaches. But here's how smart Beilein is. I mean, at the press conference this week, I talked about Colin Castleton. I know he was frustrated with the backup center play in the Iowa game, and I thought Castleton at the end of the first half had three excellent possessions and one plausible possession.
He went for a block.
Maybe he should, maybe he shouldn't have. But really, I thought he played okay. And so I mentioned this to Beilein at the press conference, and he said he's under consideration. I assume that meant he was under consideration for playing time. And then he said, we have ordered up all the tapes for every single practice, every single game minute, and the summer games that they played, and he's under consideration. And you know what he was it didn't strike me until a day later that what he was saying. He was saying, you hang out with Brian Cook and Ed Fang,
hey, what?
And you're giving me four freaking data points when I've watched every single play and practice and everything else.
Yeah.
And so he was essentially doing a Jim Mora on me, a playoffs on me.
He read you the Riot Act in a very Beilein way.
Yeah, so essentially he was chastising me in a way that was very urbane, and I didn't get it for a day.
Well, I'm sure someone asked him the exact same question about Brandon Johns 3 weeks ago, and Brandon Johns was great after the Indiana game, didn't see the court for the next few games, and now he's the eighth guy on this team.
We'll see what happens. But in any event, I thought what he did was extremely clever, completely unoffensive, but at the same point in time, giving me some information about data points.
He has a way. There was I told this story on the air. So the Rutgers post game press conference, it ends right, or at least we thought it.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So you saw that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we had the audio from it, and it cuts off when John Beilein gets up to lead a press conference. Weirott says, any more questions? You know, and that's the cue. Yeah. Press conference over, right? Well, some guy says, wow, over on the side. And Beilein looks, wow, what? And the guy's like, oh, nothing. He said, well, Beilein, as he's walking away, he says, you can't just say wow and it not be about anything. I mean, I'm thinking, when I heard it, I'm thinking that he's saying, wow, that was pretty insightful or something. Yeah. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
And then so the guy answers, he said, well, I had another question. I was going to try to squeeze in a question, but wow, you know, you're like getting up and leaving. And then I started to myself think, well, who the are you? Dude? I mean, that was my visceral
reaction.
It was
a Rutgers guy, too.
It was a Rutgers guy. Like, dude, so Beilein has to duck questions after a game he won? Like, this doesn't make any.
He didn't duck it.
I know. I'm saying, what are you getting at?
Yeah.
What are you getting at? Like, he sat here and took all the questions. Didn't know you went to ask a question. So the guy said, I had a question I was trying to squeeze in. So Beilein goes over, sits down, says, okay, ask your question. Guy asks the question. Yeah. Beilein gives him a thoughtful answer. And he's like, everything good?
And I think everyone? He asked him two questions. I think he asked him something else. And he answered that
and
too,
he said, everything good? Everyone cool? Yeah. No more wows? Then he got up and left. It's like, man, that's
He didn't troll him, but he trolled him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And it's exactly what I'm trying to say, Sam, and it's exactly what he did to me. And he did it in an incredibly urbane and polite way.
The Rutgers.
And it took me a day to figure out that's what he had done. So good for him.
Right. I don't think that guy knew he got trolled, but he did. And he handled it with grace, and that's John for you, man. I give him a ton of credit because you know, not every coach would have handled it that way. I know if I wouldn't have handled it that way if I was in his shoes, like, what up? Yeah. I mean, it was taking everything in me not to cuss on the air when I was talking about it. So, at any rate, we look across the Big Ten landscape, and boy, oh boy, Michigan State. It's looking a little bit different now. You remember that discussion we had, guys,
about Langford,
yeah. and they're better without him. You guys still think that?
Well, I didn't say they were better without him. I just said it, I didn't think it made much of a difference. We might be reconsidering that a little bit, because a lot of teams are doubling Ward and just sticking to Winston, and these guys that are playing aren't doing too hot. Like,
although Goins is shooting threes all of a sudden. He's hitting threes.
I think he's got a spot on the floor where he's pretty decent. But, like, you know, Justin Arns in that game was like, I don't know about that. They started a guy who had like a 4 turnovers and nothing else kind of box score, which is not good. I don't know if you guys know that. They have McQuaid. McQuaid's just a shooter. They don't have anyone who can create a shot except for Winston.
Yeah, I think I, speaking for myself, underestimated the loss of Langford for them. I thought it would make some difference, but I think it's made more difference than I had originally anticipated. Yeah. Incidentally, Winston, I don't know if you saw, they had Michigan State in their last loss. I think they've lost 3 in a row.
3, yeah.
Michigan State had 24 turnovers in that game.
Well, they're playing Illinois.
9 of them.
And Winston had 9. I think he had 9 assists, 9 turnovers. And by comparison, even though X had 4 in his last game, I think he's leading the Big Ten in assist-turnover ratio. I think it's 3.29. In fact, I'm sure it is because I calculated. 3.29 to 1. So that's the best in the Big Ten. But I don't know what's going on with Michigan State. Izzo teams have never really valued the ball. I can't figure out quite why.
Well, they had 25 turnovers against Illinois last year.
Is that right?
So, like, that Illinois pressure defense is
good.
That they struggle with. And they don't really get many turnovers on defense, and they turn the ball over a lot on offense. So
I think we all like Brad Underwood.
Yeah, I mean, this Michigan State team is just so different from last year, where you had a couple high NBA picks, high ceiling type guys, and this team's like a scrapper, right? I mean, not the athletic talent that they've had in the past. Their defense was good. I mean, I'm looking at the last 3 losses. I mean, teams have shot over 40% from 3 and close to 40% from 3 against Illinois. So, you know, a little bit of variance on the defense there.
Well, reason that their 3-point defense should be as good as it is. They give up a lot of shots.
Sure.
So why aren't those going down? Well, it's probably just luck.
Randomness.
Yeah, I guess what I saw coming down the pike for them, and they did a good job of kind of obscuring, you know, the issue for a period of time, but there was going to be a point where you're going to need someone else to take the pressure off of Cassius Winston when it came to not just creating his own shot, but creating for others. And you look at the end of games for them, or the end of the who's the last team they just played? Illinois.
Yeah.
Every time down the floor, it was give the ball to Cassius and make something happen. Right. I mean, it was so glaring that no one else on the team could do anything.
Right.
It's all got to be him. And I'll stress again, Josh Langford is not this super isolation guy, but he on that team, I mean, just to have a guy that had a little bit of that flavor would help them a ton. And right now they don't. So if Cassius, if he doesn't have a great game, that's like if he struggles, they're losing. Period.
Well, and now if you've got a couple of good or you've got a big good perimeter defender, you can put him on Winston. So Romeo Langford saw a lot of time against Winston. You know, they have Io Dunsumu, who's 6'4".
His eyes lit up. when he saw Cam at the end of the game. My, he was like, yes, that like, guy's on me.
But like on the other end of the court, like Michigan can now put Charles Matthews on him. And Charles Matthews, I don't want to denigrate X, but maybe we should.
but
Winston's maybe able to hit some shots over X, you put Matthews on him, and it's like, now what?
Right.
So, and then
it's a good point.
What are you going to do? Like,
it's a great point.
Is Matt McQuaid going to drive on X? No. No, that guy's a character from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He's not driving on anybody.
I mean, he is 6'4", 6'6". I mean,
you got to be able to drive past the guy, though. Are you going to post him? I mean, what difference does it make if he can't get to the rim?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he might be able to shoot over him if X is on him.
All right. I mean, all of his threes are assisted. I think not all, literal, but most of them are. So he's not really a pull-up three shooter. He's got to be open.
Right. Well, speaking of X, just a couple things. He's shooting 74% from the free throw line in the Big Ten. Hard as that is to believe.
Oh, we would give you all over you on the small sample size of that.
I know, but
I mean, his sample size is small for the whole year. He's at 63% now for the season. He's got 41 attempts. Yeah. So, like, he hasn't been to line very much, so this recent hot streak has gotten him up to, like, oh, that's plausible, which is like, hey.
That's good.
And he's definitely changed his shot. He's got a ton of arc on it that didn't used to be there. So maybe it's a new day.
And if you look at his data, especially in the Big Ten, I was trying to think of a similar sort of line, and it's Jason Kidd. And I'm not saying he's Jason Kidd, because Jason Kidd is 6'4", 6'5", but he's, you know, you're looking at a guy scoring 12 points a game, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.25 steals.
Yeah, I don't
Jason
think
Kidd.
I mean, like, in terms of, like, stylistically, like...
No, he's not style.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, this is a team that's controlled by its point guard, despite the fact that the point guard doesn't score a lot of points.
Right.
So he's, what, had 12, 7, and 7 in assists the last three games, and... When Michigan goes down the floor, most of the time it's like, all right, we got to get this action initiated with X. And sometimes you're going to get Iggy driving off that. Sometimes you're going to get Matthews driving off that. But the guy who loosens up the defense, gets him kind of out of position, and then you can attack closeouts is X.
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite guys ever, no doubt.
I think he topped himself with the hook shots against Rutgers, the late clock one.
And he did something that's never been done in the history of basketball. He did a crossover dribble into a hook shot.
I tweeted
no
about
one
that.
Has ever done that. It's never happened.
I had never seen.
And that.
I know you didn't get that from me because you're not on Twitter, but I literally tweeted. That very thing. I've never seen a guy cross over into a hook.
Yeah,
I
was watching with my wife and Dave Nasternak at my house, and that's at the moment I said that's never happened before. You know,
but that's not as hyperbolic as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
When you started your statement, I was like, here we go. What is he going to say now? To top what he said last time with Terry Mills, whose crew is actually going to be
love Terry
celebrated.
Mills.
We got to get to a break, and we'll be back on the other side to close things out here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. So, fellas. There was some movement on the coaching staff this week. It was inevitable. You knew that one assistant was going to have to be out.
Right.
Right? They, you know, you can't have more than 10. So that move was Pep Hamilton leaving to pursue other options and Ben McDaniels promoted to the quarterback's coach.
Pep Hamilton was promoted to a beach in Tahiti. Got a 2-year contract for $1 million a year that he's going to enjoy, I imagine. I mean, maybe he'll get back into it, but as always, this proves Ed was wrong.
What?
why was Ed wrong?
Because he was his neighbor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I was wrong?
Yeah. There you go. Yeah,
you know, I don't know what the details of his buyout are, so I don't know that it's the
buyout. So, I assume they got to pay him, right? I assume he had a contract.
I don't know.
I mean, he'll have to like have a good faith effort to find a job somewhere.
Right, he's got to mitigate his damages, but if he doesn't, they pay him.
But nobody apparently wanted Pep at that price because you know he's shopped around for. I mean, maybe he got a head coach job somewhere, but nobody wants him for that. So now he's got to go be an assistant somewhere for I don't know who. Did USC lose its coordinator again?
Not again.
Not again.
Yeah, well,
not yet.
Give it a 5 minutes.
Month. Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine he'll either be, you know, you got those right now. You got those alternative football leagues. What is it? I can't remember what they're called.
AFL and there's the XFL.
Yeah.
Which Bob Stoops is coaching in. Did you think about giving him a call, Ohio State? Maybe.
And then getting back in the NFL or college. Next year would be my guess.
He'll be in the NFL. There's always a spot in the NFL.
But some of the coaching staffs are still turning over, right? With three new head coaches being announced after the Super Bowl, so there's always that too.
Okay. But Ben McDaniel's the guy that takes over quarterbacks. He's coached quarterback. We initially thought receivers because that's the interim tag he had, and but he's also coached quarterbacks.
Well, he was a quarterback, so it's a cleaner fit for him. And with Gattis around, I mean, that's the guy you want coaching receivers.
Okay. So does this all mean that Harbaugh is becoming more of a CEO coach? I mean, does it feel like I mean, it's certainly true on defense.
I think that's the way to react to it.
I mean,
the way Brian just did is we'll see. I think the plan that he's laid out is that you know, he said the offensive coordinator is Josh Gattis, and you've heard Josh in an interview say I'm going to be calling the plays.
And given the circumstances of his departure from Alabama, he almost gets hired by Maryland. Alabama loses their co-OC. Is he coming to Michigan without a pretty strong promise that he is like the de facto offensive coordinator? I kind of doubt it.
Which means scrapping the three coaches sending ideas to Harbaugh.
Well, I mean, I don't
play calling.
Like, I don't think Alabama didn't have three guys on the
headset
being like giving suggestions and stuff. It's just like, who's definitely in charge? Well, it's Gattis.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I think the deal is. And Harbaugh's going to be able to
veto things still.
Yeah. Put his opinion in, but he will, I guess, take a step back.
Yeah,
from play to play.
Yeah, I mean, and Warner had a play sheet. Warner's going to have a play sheet. Mm-hmm. Like, I want Warner to have a play sheet. Like, his ability to get Michigan's quarterback run game going was really good.
I mean, we're going to find out when they're down in a game, and we'll see if they take 35 seconds.
We're going to
get a snap off. when they're down in the second half. I don't think there's anything wrong with the CEO type approach. It can work. You got to make it work, and Harbaugh's got to continue to hire good guys. And
well, you know, he's been very pointed, and not necessarily with the words, although he has been more revealing than he typically is with what his thought process is about his offense or how his offense will be run. But you know, I think as we just heard Brian say, you know, it's the we'll see.
The spring game will be of great interest.
I think you won't really be able to tell until the season.
I think
until
the season. I think you'll be able to. They'll have worked on some stuff and they'll want to try it out. And if it's tempo, then that's different.
So the other thing you just said, you're on a roll. And so tempo. I think this process is more conducive to being a tempo team at times.
Right, but I don't think even like being a tempo team. It's just not being absurdly slow. And slow in times where you just can't be absurdly slow.
Oh, I hear what you're saying, but I also think, you know, being able to go up tempo at times, that's not 2 minute, not a 2 minute scenario, can be advantageous. We saw, for instance, Ohio State do it in situations that weren't 2 minute, and there were a few times where they caught Michigan not even lined up yet.
I mean, I hate it when opponents go tempo. I'm like, oh, stop doing this. This is crap. So, of course, I want Michigan to do it because it's obviously something that gives me the hives.
Yeah, it's not like it's not going to be a staple or anything, but just to have it in your toolkit.
Yeah, like a curveball.
And listening to Josh Gattis talk, it sounds like that is in his arsenal along with four wides and, you know, some other things that we haven't seen him do a lot of.
Well, I mean, if you look at the personnel of this team next year, you have three excellent receivers. You brought in a bunch of slot guys. Your primary running back is Drew Wilson. So it's probably time to pass a lot and probably pass from the spread where Patterson is most comfortable. Run some RPOs and do some stuff.
I don't think it's time to pass a lot. I think it's time to pass more.
You don't think it's time to pass a lot with DPJ in the slot?
I think it's time to pass more. You know, if Michigan comes, I mean, this year, what did we throw? 39% of the time, something like that.
Yeah, we were one of the more run-heavy teams.
I mean,
in the
we need to be pushing closer to 50-50 than 61-39.
And as improved as the tackles were this year, they weren't great, so... If the pass protection gets better, I'm all the more into
having
throwing
one slant in the playbook might have helped the pass protection as well. So I think that's the main reason that, you know, Michigan didn't throw is that their passing game was completely incompatible with their pass protection. So like the short stuff was like all hitches, which is a crappy play. And it's something where I would rather have a kind of a modern-ish approach than like, okay, let's go deep. Because they didn't have the protection to go deep very much, so they didn't throw very much.
I don't disagree.
Well, that brings us to the end of the show. As always, fellas, spirited, opinionated. Appreciate your time, delayed as it may have been.
Do
you have any gripes with John Beilein you want to get off your chest?
I am accepting apologies for the next 30 minutes.
Right.
He's cool. Watching tape of Ethan Happy's too busy.
Yeah, I'm sure. Coach Beilein has a way of hearing what people say. I mean,
I'll ask Kathleen next time I see her at Whole Foods.
I regret this joke immediately. I regret it. It was a joke. Please don't take me seriously.
All right, that'll do it for today's show. Coming up next is Inside the Huddle with Michael Spath. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor Accumulus Station.